heart's on the loose. You rolled them sevens with nothing to lose. This ain't no place for the weary kind.
Hello, welcome to the newest episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Routh, and with me is Dan Mecca.
And Connor O'Donnell.
Now, Connor, he has written an article for our site once in a blue moon.
Once.
And he's joining us. He goes to our college, and he's joining us today to discuss Edge of Darkness and Crazy Heart. And we're also going to talk a little about
the Oscar noms.
Yes, Oscar noms that got announced this morning. So let's get right into it. The Oscar noms were announced this morning at 5:38 a.m.
Pacific
by Anne Hathaway. And
another guy.
The Academy President.
Tom Sherrick, yeah.
Yeah. So, Dan, any surprises for you?
I guess this wasn't a huge surprise, but it was pleasing to see Jeremy Renner get nominated for Best Actor. And then also, obviously, the two... Actually, I guess in terms of Best Picture, three big surprises were Avatar. Just kidding. Were The Blind Side, District 9, and A Serious Man. That was nice.
I was kind of surprised by Uneducation as well.
I don't know. I mean, that I feel like
that was
that
was like
movie's got
cuff.
Some really serious fans.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But yeah.
Definitely a lot of clout behind it. It wasn't, I think Blind Side and D9, at least in my opinion, definitely the two biggest surprises.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. But, I mean, I think, and with The Blind Side being nominated, I think it's pretty much a sure thing that Sandra Bullock is going to take it home.
Oh.
But I was saying kind of earlier, it's kind of ironic that both The Blind Side and Precious got nominated for Best Picture. Because they're essentially two sides of the same movie,
yeah.
You know? And so it's kind of funny that they both got nominated for
and it is, and it is, you know, it's funny, it's kind of a shame that a film, with certain surprises, because, I mean, I don't think that The Blind Side should be nominated, personally.
Even though it's not a bad movie.
Right, but, no. I mean, it's kind of a shame, because I would have liked to have seen a film like Star Trek take that spot instead.
Yeah, at least The Hangover didn't, because remember the Fork Your Consideration ad that came out?
Right, exactly,
Hangover.
Yeah.
But I was really happy to see A Serious Man. That was my...
Right, yeah. Me too.
Because it didn't seem like there was that
movie.
Much support. Not a lot of people talked about it.
I mean, I think that was a case of it probably got a lot of number one votes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of points that went to it, whereas, like, The Messenger, which didn't get it, probably got a lot of, like, number eight votes.
Yeah, like District 9, I think. It's
probably got
has a lot
of
number one passionate fans.
But that's the thing, like, did The Blind Side get a lot of number one votes?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what's happening. It's, like, the weirdest thing.
Sometimes you wake up and the world just doesn't make any sense, and when you see that The Blind Side has been nominated for Best Picture.
Best
Director, I think those are all planned.
Kind of loud.
Yeah,
except
yeah.
Lee Daniels for
Precious. I would have really liked for him, no offense to him, but I would have really liked for him not to have gotten nominated, and to see maybe Lone Schifrin, is her name?
Schifrin.
I would have loved to see her get nominated, if only because that would have been two women,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or the Coens.
The Coens. Or, I mean, but while we're on the subject, I mean, as far as who should take it home, Dan and I were talking about, Catherine Bigelow, and how, like, just, it would almost be one of those times that I would like to see the politics behind the Academy at work.
Right, yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, it would be, you know, an award on the kind of social equivalent of Halle Berry winning, of Sidney Poitier winning, of Hattie McDaniel winning, you know what I mean, in terms of minorities, you know, and that would be nice.
I mean,
the women aren't the minority, but you know what I'm saying, in Hollywood, you know, so.
Now, moving on to acting noms, you said Sandra Bullock, do you think anyone else has a chance? Do you think Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep, you know, I think at this point she's the, I mean, in a perfect world, Meryl Streep and Sandra Bullock split the vote, and Harry Mulligan, yes. But I have to say, I wish Helen Mirren didn't get nominated,
because
I think she's the weakest in that category, and I would have loved to have seen, Zoe Saldana get nominated for Natiri in Avatar, but...
And I was wondering, for Ambassadors, because they all got ignored, the women Ambassadors.
Oh, Melanie LaRange.
But were they supporting, you think? That's what
I think Melanie LaRange should...
I think she had enough of a presence in the movie.
To be leading.
Yeah.
We've seen it before with acting, you know, how
and also, and the support, we can talk about the supporting actresses being weak. It was a weak match.
Monique has it, but...
She deserves it, but Penelope Cruz?
Yeah.
I mean... If she should have been nominated for something, it should have been Broken Embraces.
Yeah.
And we also talked about it, if you're talking supporting performances in 9, it should have been
Marion Cotillard. Or even, but I think maybe that was a case where people didn't know whether to vote for her as a lead actress or supporting actress, and maybe she split it kind of Scarlett Johansson's style.
And two up in the air actresses got in for supporting.
So that was interesting. They deserve it. I mean, you know, they're both great.
I didn't really think Maggie. We'll talk about Maggie Gyllenhaal's performance later.
Right, true. But she, that was kind of, that was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, and I think Jeff Bridges pretty much.
He's got it. Morgan Freeman, I mean, great imitation. That's it.
I think, you think he, like, looked at himself in the mirror while practicing it and just, like, smiled?
Yeah.
With, like, a picture of Nelson Mandela, like, right next to
him. He's like, I got this now. Matt Damon, I have to say this, Matt Damon is the strongest part of Invictus.
But that's not saying much.
But
you didn't like Colorblind?
But he's also not in the movie for that long. Yeah, I don't think people realize. He's in it for 30 minutes. It's supporting. Yeah, but his character has no depth. Like the Stanley Tucci, child molester character has more depth, and it's a much better performance.
Yeah.
I was happy to see him get
actually, around. While we're on actors, let's talk about Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
I had said this to you guys just earlier that I'm glad he got nominated. I loved him in the Hurt Locker. Thought he was really good. But I mean, like, if they put him in there literally because they were like, well, who else do we nominate that's not Daniel Day-Lewis? Obviously, I would have liked to have seen either Sam Rockwell for Moon or Viggo Mortensen for The Road.
True. Yeah. I mean, that the grassroots campaign that what's the name, the director of Moon,
Duncan Jones,
yeah, that he put on. It was just, that would have been nice to see, but he didn't get anything, so it's just kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean.
Because it's like Moon, and which is why it's awesome that like D9 got nominated for Best Picture. I mean, even though D9, it's like the biggest kid of the little guys. But I mean, it's still in a way, it's like it's one of the little guys, you know. So like, and Moon, I think very much is too, you know. Yeah. So like, to see a movie like that, I mean, particularly a movie that's so carried by one actor playing two roles that are the same role, like, you know, I mean, it,
yeah, it's speaking, you know. But I will say this though, about, I think in a sense the Academy proved the worth of the 10 nomination thing, because Avatar got nominated, D9 got nominated, right, The Blind Man got nominated, like these big blockbusters got nominated, and also An Education got nominated, Serious Man got nominated, you know what I mean, The Hurt Locker, like, so you have literally the best of both worlds, and if that was their intention, which I can't imagine, Box Office Mojo has the calculation, that's $1.5 billion into the Best Picture nominees. That's beautiful. Like, hopefully, people who like The Blind Side in Arkansas will watch the Oscars, you know, and then people who like Avatar Everywhere will watch the Oscars, and then people who like The Hurt Locker and The Coasts will, you know.
What I think, looking at all these nominations and thinking about, like, which ones were surprises, which ones weren't, like, what do you think these nominations would have been if it was just five?
I think you can take the five directing noms, and that's what would have been the Best Picture nom.
That's what Roger Ebert says, and I agree with him totally.
Yeah. It would have been
Bastards, Precious, Up in the Air,
Hurt Locker,
and
Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty, and I think those are the ones competing. I mean, well, obviously,
you don't think An Education would have,
No, An Education, I mean, I would have loved to have seen it, but no. I lost some steam at the end.
Yeah, some nice noms. We'll just talk about some of the minor categories. Imaginarium got...
Oh, hell yes.
Got Art Direction.
Is it two or three?
Got two. Art Direction and...
costume.
And which, for that film, that's...
Right, I mean, that's exactly what it needs.
And what's up with Harry Potter getting cinematography?
I'm not a big fan of the franchise in general, but that was... I mean, A, that was easily the, I think...
The color design...
The best looking one.
Half-Blood Prince was one of the best of the year, I would say. So I guess if that is part of... was that cinematography?
Cinematography. That's only not Macaw. Yeah.
That's weird, actually. I guess I didn't realize.
District 9.
It's funny when you look at Oscar noms, like, my eye looked past some stuff, and then when I went back, I was like, wait, Paris 36?
It's funny. I mean, you look at the cinematography category, like, something... I personally thought that... I mean, even though J.J. Abrams loves to do the whole lens flare thing all the time, but I actually loved the cinematography.
Yeah, it's a beautiful. Star Trek. A movie like that. I don't know.
Even guys, what happened to the original song now for Leona Lewis's "I See"?
I know. that campaign just went downhill. I don't know.
It's just damn.
It's so weird. Now, foreign film, I think White Ribbon will take it, but I would love to see a profit
take it.
Please do.
Please.
And then
White Ribbon is
I have to watch it. I have to watch it.
Was that a film stage review right there? The White Ribbon.
Oh no, you can see Dan's 6 out of 10.
Yeah, who has the balls to give the White Ribbon 6 out of 10? That's like a 9 out of 10 or 2 out of 10 movie. And I was like, oh, I'll give it a 6. Mistake.
But then the movie that we haven't seen yet, but I really want to watch, El Divo, got Best Makeup. Yeah, I didn't think anyone that was nice. Saw that.
Yeah. And then also, I'm really curious about this, Ajari movie?
Oh,
which
one? The animated one?
Is it animated? Or
oh, no, Ajami, yeah.
Ajami.
I thought you were talking about the Secret of the
Cows. No. Ajari? Is that
Ajami?
Ajami, I'm sorry. Ajami, yeah. I am curious to see that because it's got like a 90% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. And then the last thing, do you want to talk about visual effects? Transformers got robbed.
That's
what the visual effects are incredible. Yeah. I mean,
as far as that franchise goes, the fact that the Golden Compass won over the first Transformers. That was kind of a crime. Like, because I remember watching the first Transformers and being like, well, you know, when I wasn't so upset at the second one kind of thing, watching the first one for the first time being like, wow, that looks really good. But
anyway. Yeah, I mean, but Oscars also, they usually favor popularity, like you said. And Matrix, like the sequels I was looking, they didn't get any noms for when they did visual effects. Yeah. And like, so I feel like people...
But
like,
I mean, it was nice for Transformers to get sound. And the sound designers for Transformers
phenomenal.
Incredible. Yeah, I mean, that is... I mean, for both movies, that has always been the best part, the sound effects. It literally keep you awake, literally.
For 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
The
sound design kept me awake through a Megan Fox performance. Good for the sound design.
That's why no one saw Jennifer's body, because there's no crazy robots.
Anyway, so lastly, writing. You want to talk about writing? In the Loop, that was nice to see.
Yeah. I think the question should be, who will get to the podium first when up in the air wins, Sheldon Turner or Jason Reitman?
Oh, God, hopefully Jason Reitman will fall flat on his face.
Hopefully Sheldon Turner will get up first. But, there was another surprise on writing.
Well, District 9 got adapted screenplay.
No, but there was something else, wasn't there? There was
The Messenger.
The Messenger, that was nice. That was a nice
thing. That was original, yeah.
Warren Lordman. And then
Up, that's expected. Bastards. Right. A series.
What about for adapted, anything?
Adapted. District 9 and Education in the Loop. Precious and Up in there.
So I guess In the Loop is a big kind of nice little Before Sunset thing.
So many people online were saying how they thought 500 Days of Summer should have got, but I didn't.
I don't really particularly agree. I mean, those are strong.
Wait, an adapted or original? Are you saying
for original? Sorry.
Oh yeah, okay. Because 500. Yeah. I was actually saying it would have been nice. In a movie that I actually enjoyed. I mean, granted, I have only seen 500 Days of Summer like 1.5 times, but a movie that I enjoyed more than 500 Days of Summer, Away We Go.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen that get down.
Yeah, but that kind of, like, from the get-go, no one, like, it kind of got mixed response.
Yeah, definitely.
But I loved it,
Yeah, definitely agree.
So, last, you want to go around and just say what we think will win Best Picture?
Yeah.
Dan?
So, all right, I think, let's just do Best Picture, Best Director, because that's the question. Right. Yeah. So I think it's going to be Avatar and Catherine Bigelow.
I think Avatar and Hurt Locker, I think, are...
Do you think is going to happen?
I would not be surprised if it was either one of them. I could definitely see Catherine Bigelow getting...
Best Director.
Best Director, absolutely.
And Avatar winning.
And Avatar winning Best Picture. But I could also see it...
Going the other way.
Right. Yeah. Or going both ways. Like, I could see Avatar...
Taking both,
you know.
That'd be nice. Like, that'd be, like, a weird surprise if Hurt Locker took both. I don't think they have a chance to take both.
But I agree with Dan. I think
Avatar and then Catherine.
All right, so...
She did direct K-19, The Widowmaker.
Yeah, I
know.
Thoroughly.
You know what I mean?
Thoroughly.
It's like...
She directed Harrison Ford in his, you know, his best... performance, other than Extraordinary Measures, of course.
Yeah,
you know,
let's not. We already talked about that. We're never talking about
it. I can't believe we just referenced it. I feel sick.
You know what? You can get out of my lab. Right?
Get out of my lab. All right. Let's talk about Crazy Heart. This movie was
Bridges.
Bridges. Now this is obviously, like we said, Jeff Bridges got nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah, he will win.
Yeah, and this movie, it wasn't even supposed to come out this year. A little background: it was supposed to come out in the springtime, and then when I think Gentlemen Broncos failed, I don't know if that was like right around the time when they
were
at theaters, and then Fox starts. I needed something else, so they did a quick campaign for this, and it worked. So I'm surprised how far it's gone. Yeah,
I mean,
even financially, it did really well.
Once Bridges wins, it'll just
how
much it cost? Was it 8? Something like that.
I don't know. But this is the directorial debut from Scott Cooper. A lot of really good directorial debuts this year.
Like, yeah.
Crazy great. Amount. Mark Webb.
Yeah.
Blomkamp.
Just Blomkamp. Yeah. Moon.
What's Moon?
I'm just kidding.
Jones. Duncan Jones.
The Messenger.
Yes. Morbid. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I can't wait to see that guy's next movie, actually. Oren Morbman. I really can't wait to see that guy's next movie. Yeah, I can't wait to see what Ben Foster does next. I think yeah. he kind of got overshadowed by Woody Harrelson. But
he's also
let's just say, Woody Harrelson, I am very, very happy that he finally got nominated. Like, he deserves it.
He's had a really, really strong run lately.
Just you know good. I mean,
they could have nominated him for Zombieland, and I might right. have been pleased. Like, I'm like, it's right, like, okay.
Exactly.
Like,
no, exactly.
Yeah, he's such a range.
Versatile.
I saw Defender, this indie movie he did.
Right.
He did that, too, and it's like, it'll probably come on next year. But yeah, he's had such a weird, you know, strange
good,
thing.
Good for him.
So, awesome. Well, back to Crazy Heart. Yeah. So far, it's made almost $7 million, but there's no, I don't
and,
know.
And it's not even budget. Really, I mean, all the attention it's been getting, it's a, and Dan, you've said this many times, it's an actor showcase.
It is.
You know? Yeah. And because of that, like, it's not even any, it's not like a fluke that it's doing well, because Bridges is the reason to see the movie. Yeah.
I mean, it's literally Tender Mercies, right? The Robert Duvall 1980 movie, which he won for. It's literally like that movie, and Robert Duvall's even in this
and
film.
Almost,
right? Which is almost like a shot, which I actually like.
Yeah.
But it's not as strong as that movie. It's not as strong as The Wrestler, which has there's a lot of components that are similar. I mean, it's a good movie.
Like most actor showcases, though, because like for instance, The Wrestler, you could argue that that's an actor showcase as well. But that also, I mean, Marissa Tomei was phenomenal. Evan Rachel Wood, who I actually don't even really like that much, but she was really good.
Yeah.
There were a lot of really awesome things about that movie.
Well directed.
But Crazy Heart, I think, falls into where most actor showcases do. Where I think that, like, the movie itself just isn't as good as that. So, I mean, like, personally, I don't think a movie like Ray is as good as...
Well, it's like, I mean, if I can make kind of a strange metaphor, but it's like, I feel like in a lot of cases, actor showcases is like the Earth, the sun revolving around the Earth. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, rotating around the Earth. Like, it's kind of like, it should be the actor rotating around a great movie, but it becomes a good movie rotating around an incredible performance.
Exactly.
Single Man's almost like that too.
Yeah.
I would say I thought Single Man was a much stronger film than Crazy Heart.
I agree. Yeah.
But I mean, Colin Firth kind of really anchored that film. But
yeah,
you know, Matthew Good
was phenomenal.
Or but hang on though.
Yeah.
I know you guys. I think you guys disagree with me. I think this is gonna happen, but I think Maggie Gyllenhaal gave like a great performance in Crazy Heart.
She was good. I don't mind Maggie Gyllenhaal as an actress too much. I mean, there are times where I can't stand her, times that I think she's really good. I happen to think that this is one of the better performances
I've
seen.
I mean, I think for her, this and Strange of the Fiction are two of her stronger performances.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I agree.
I liked, like you said, Robert Duvall, but also Colin Farrell's in this movie.
Yeah, I liked him.
I actually really liked him.
I don't
know if his voice was dubbed or if that
was
his voice. His voice was rough.
The funny thing is, I mean, it should be noted, like, he doesn't have a bad voice.
He just doesn't have a country voice.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's not a bad voice, it's just not a country voice.
Yeah.
Especially when you got, like, Bridges doing kind of his imitation of Ryan Bingham, and Ryan Bingham doing his imitation of Hank Williams, and then Colin Farrell sounding like, you know, J.C. Chazé. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, J.C. Chazé doesn't have a bad voice, but he doesn't sing, rockabilly, you know what I mean?
And we talked about the directing. I don't know, I thought some of it was, like, pretty repetitive, especially with the concert stuff. Like, there was, like, at least 10 shots
Dubbing was bad.
Shots of when the camera follows him from behind one side and goes around the other. Like, and they just repeat it over again.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's like, nice to see, but you can tell, like, Scott Cooper, he, like...
It was also very much, as far as movies about musicians go, it was a paint-by-numbers kind of movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because movies with musicians have
that
shots
wasn't,
like that.
That wasn't willing to even finish the painting.
Right, like, it, yeah.
You know, to logical, like, kind of wrestler...
It was like a paint-by-numbers that couldn't count. Like,
right.
You know, it was...
Yeah.
And I never felt that bad for Jeff Bridges. Like, there was
well,
never...
Well, me and Connor were talking about this, because we saw it together.
Yeah.
There was never, like... Because when I first saw The Wrestler, I literally was bawling. Like,
yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
So at the end of this movie, like, you want a moment like that where... Right.
And he always kind of has a chance in the movie. You know, he has an agent that's willing to do stuff
for him. I mean, the best agent in the world.
Right,
yeah.
and he has his cake, and he eats it too, kind of thing. Like,
in a way,
like,
I mean, you know,
like,
to an extent. To
right,
an extent.
Yeah, it's like your career's not going so great, and yes...
Well, spoilers if you're going to give away stuff, but yeah,
you know, your career's not going so great. Yes, you're an alcoholic, which is probably the most painful part of the movie, is that, like, this guy...
Very rough to watch.
Yeah, like, that's rough. Well, it's like, you know, you're living in a house, whereas you look at a movie like The Wrestler, it's like, wow. Like,
he got locked out of his trailer.
You have no career, you get locked out of your trailer, and you sleep in a van.
Yeah.
And dude, he was a wrestler. He had a career.
Yeah.
This guy. That's funny. No, but yeah, you're right. No, I totally agree with you.
I thought the music was. I know you didn't like the dubbing, but I thought the music was a strong part.
No, yeah, the music was incredible. I thought that they could have done better work with the lip sync.
Yeah. Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, no, the soundtrack was great.
The soundtrack was incredible. And then we got to talk about this. If the Weary Kind does not win Best Original Song,
right.
I will burn the Kodak theater down.
I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, we've been.
Connor, what do we agree on when we saw them? Remember this? We had this conversation about the song. We said that the.
Oh wait, which about
the song
is better than the movie. Yeah, that song is like, I almost actually wish, and we've been comparing these movies a lot in the past 30 seconds, but you look at The Wrestler and Crazy Heart, like you had that song that everybody got pissed because it didn't get nominated.
Well, Bruce Springsteen, right?
Yeah, when that was kind of an upset. Yeah, but
it's a good song.
Because that in everybody's minds was like a shoo-in for like
yeah,
best.
Yeah, yeah, one.
But it's a fine. I don't even like Bruce Springsteen that much. But it's a fine song.
It's a good song.
Yeah, and but like that movie was a lot more beautiful than that song and Crazy Heart. Right. Like it's like Weary Kind should have been the song for The Wrestler. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's such a beautiful. If all and this is. Coming from Dan Mecca, actually, if all country music was like the Weary Kind,
still, yeah,
I would love country.
It'd be my favorite genre. Yeah, it would be literally.
I was thinking about this. I was like, why do I hate country so much? Because I love this right now.
Yeah,
like,
it's so good. It's such
a
good
song. But that was some of the best parts of Crazy Heart is when they talk about
how country is now.
Like, what is it? Artificial country.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And like he's like just it's Tommy Sweet, real country. And he's like, well, everyone tries to hide it, but he's real country. Like yeah, like that. Yeah. Like I love that shit. You know, like that was interesting.
And I love that. I love that one line. It's in the film when he first starts writing the song. Spoilers, he starts writing a song called The Weary Kind. But it's when he starts writing the song and she, he's playing it to Maggie Gyllenhaal and she's just kind of doing whatever and she says, I think I've heard that before. And then he says, that's the way a good song, it's something along the lines.
He's like, that's the way a good song is. You always think you heard it before.
You've heard it before. Yeah. And I remember hearing that line and being like, yes, because The Weary
Kind. And sorry about the ants. Yeah. There's an Amadeus moment in that scene. Like, that harks back to, like, the mediocrity question that was all over Amadeus, where Maggie Gyllenhaal just says, like, you sit down in a bed for 5 minutes and you can think of that song, and, like, most people spend their whole life trying to, like, write. Yeah. And it's like, if the movie had maybe tackled that idea more, like, Bridges can just, like, because Tommy Sweet gets all of his songs from people like Bad Blake, who's Bridges' character. Like, he doesn't actually write his own music, but, I mean, he's got the face and he's got the voice, presumably. He's got the image. He's got that name. If it had had more of that Amadeus kick, the movie could have taken it to the next level, but it just doesn't have the gall to do that now.
And, I mean, I'm kind of glad that, like, that movie did use the song as, like, a real big... Because for a while, I was almost... The fact that things were, when you compare it, like, to, like, a character in The Wrestler, like, things were going relatively well for Bridges. Like I said, he had a house.
I love who we call him Bridges.
Yeah, no, because anyway, he's Bridges.
Yeah, he's classic Bridges. Bridges. He's classic Bridges.
It was, like, a sad story.
We call him Obadiah. Sorry, guys. So cute.
I'm going to call him Billy Flynn from here on out, because, Tron and
Thunderbolt
in 2010.
Yeah.
So when Billy Flynn, everything was going... I can't do that. No, but everything was going really well for him. Well, not really well, but relatively well.
Right, yeah,
and,
not bad.
Like, so I'm just glad that that song became a really, like, just centerpiece of the film, because it really... Like, it's almost like the filmmakers acknowledge that this song is better than the movie. And so it that was definitely, I think.
Yeah, I really liked how they worked it into the movie, because I had no idea. Oh, you told me, but I had no idea before that.
Yeah. I mean, and if nothing else, this film, if nothing else other than the Oscar that's going to get Bridges, who's deserved an Oscar since The Last Picture Show, if nothing else other than that, this shows people country music that isn't Kenny Chesney, isn't Toby Keith, Tim McGraw, but it's more...
What Bad Blake would call real country.
Right, real country, exactly. And so that's, for that, it should be thanked, So.
All right, well, you guys want to move on? We'll do these score on and say, if you how much you liked Crazy Art. Right. People should check it out.
Yeah, I would say 6.5 out of 10-ish.
I'd go into the 7 range, but and I mean, just because of that song
and that performance. And Jeff Bridges. I'd agree, 7. Yeah. 7 based on Bridges.
I have to agree, too. Right.
Unanimous. And anyone could see it. And they would not leave feeling that they got cheated out of the money.
Yeah, definitely.
Unlike our next movie.
We're about to take it to the edge, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it took darkness. Yeah. Now, this is Martin Campbell's...
Martin Vertical Limit Campbell.
Yeah. Now, he directed...
Mask of Zorro Campbell.
Yeah, now, before those movies, Campbell. He directed, in 1985, he directed Edge of Darkness, the actual BBC series.
Wait, Jordan, that's weird, because this movie's called The Edge of Darkness.
I know, it's
weird.
Oh,
that's a coincidence.
And there's a lot of problems that go from trying to adapt a 6-part miniseries to an hour and a half movie, and as you've seen. So, but William Monahan wrote the script, who was behind The Departed, Body of Lies.
He's got London Boulevard coming out, his directorial debut,
Name of Heaven.
He's also writing... correct me if I'm wrong, he's writing Mel Gibson's Viking movie.
Is he writing it?
Supposedly. He's supposed to be working.
Yeah. No.
And so this film follows Thomas Craven, and he's...
Whoa.
Look at that name.
Yeah, and
Raju, God bless him, said Craven is always a reliable last name for a movie, and I respect that observation. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, so in the beginning of the film, no spoilers here, his daughter dies.
What?
Yeah, guys.
Dude, I didn't see it.
Dude, we're just lying, bro.
So the rest of the film, he kind of goes insane, and there's this whole undercover plot.
He's a cop on the edge.
Yeah. Of darkness. From Boston. Yeah,
clearly.
From Boston.
Boston. Let's take a minute. I mentioned this in my review. Yeah. Boston accents.
Yes.
How do we feel about them? Because they're... New York accents are pretty standard in terms of, like, you know, if you want to go mobster, if you want to go da-da-da-da, you know, like, there's different levels, and they're pretty distinct, right? Boston. What's up? What's up with the Boston accent?
Two years ago, Amy Ryan, I loved hers, and Got Maybe Gone.
Right, so...
Does it depend on the actor?
Me and Connor were talking about this earlier. Ben Affleck, from Boston, does a working-class Boston accent. People shit down its throat about it, literally. They're like... Mark Wahlberg does a Boston accent. People don't really. He gets an Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
It's literally pretty much the same exact accent as Ben Affleck's. Okay. All right. Amy Ryan, another very hard working-class accent. She gets nominated and deserved it, totally. And just like I think Mark Wahlberg deserved it. But then, like, what?
Julianne Moore did one on 30 Rock. Remember her? Right, heavy one?
Julianne Moore, yeah.
I actually read an article because we were kind of talking about this. How it's a little too heavy. I don't know. That's what I thought. But
right.
But the producer, like, there's a statement from the producer defending it. He's like, I know people like this. Like, I'm not going to stick by it.
Here's my question. Yeah. It appears, and I wrote this, that even people from Boston don't know what people from Boston sound like. Because I know people from Boston who are like, oh, that's fucking bullshit. You know, like, in the same accent that they're criticizing, they criticize the accent. And I'm like,
they drop in their eyes, and they say that that's a fucking horrible accent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We should just chop them up and feed them to the pool.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio got a little bit of crap for his accent, and like, how is that accent any worse than Matt Damon or Mark Wahlberg's? Explain it. Like, someone just emailed me with an explanation, is what I asked.
And as far as Boston accents go in Edge of Darkness, like, Dan, you and I were talking about this the other day, kudos to Mel Gibson for...
being consistent.
Whether you argue that it's ridiculous or over the top or whatever, like, and maybe it is, who knows, you know, apparently, even if you're from Boston,
no,
you can't tell me, but it's the anomaly of speech in movies, but,
Only Boston,
right, yeah, but
in London.
He's consistent, and unlike, say, and this, I think Colin Farrell, terrific actor, but sometimes when it comes to an accent, can't consistently hold it. And,
or Sam Worthington.
Every
movie's made
right, and that's a problem because like
it could take you out of
pull. And I know you're gonna love this reference. Pull an Amadeus, and just don't do it. Like
exactly.
You know that's
pull
why
a Tom, pull a Tom Cruise and Valkyrie.
Right,
just
right.
Don't
and
do it.
I mean, say what you will about Valkyrie. Like I happen to like it, but
a good decision not to talk.
Just not
with
to do
German
it.
Accents, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, I just think... But Mel Gibson succeeds, though, in that respect. He has a consistent accent.
Yeah, good, no, and, right. And good for him.
But where the movie doesn't succeed... Well,
is everywhere else.
In terms of speed... Or, Ray Winstone. Was he supposed to have any type of accent except an intelligible one? Because that's what came across.
Spoiler, you don't know what he says.
Yeah.
No, here's the thing. Okay, so Ray Winstone and Danny Houston.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, Danny Houston's the bad guy in the movie. You want to talk about
in the first frame.
You want to talk about obvious casting. Yes. The first time he comes on the screen, I'm like, wow, that guy did everything wrong. Like, literally, mystery solved. That guy's behind everything. Like, there's no... Like, because it's Danny Houston.
He was the head
vampire in 30 Days of Night. He was like...
Spoiler alert, let's not forget the amnesia bullets in X-Men Origins.
Right, well, he was Stryker last year. Like, he's been the bad guy in life.
But even the way the movie handles him, it's not just him as a person.
True, that's true.
Like, the first time you see him, Mel Gibson comes to his...
And he's so over-the-top cooperative, but like, so it's like creepy.
Yeah. I thought that was a really weird way to handle it, because from the beginning of the movie, for the first 30 minutes, I think, you're with Mel Gibson for the whole time, and then it cuts to like the scene in a parking garage, and like Ray Winstone comes out, and like, you've never seen this guy before, like, they didn't bring him in anywhere before.
And I mean, I think weird about the movie, it doesn't stay first person the entire time with Gibson, which is strange, because you'd feel like, I don't know.
It should have, definitely.
You know, because, like, for example, if you're going to make All the President's Men, you stay with Woodward and Bernstein because they were the people who solved the mystery. And this is a very similar narrative archetype, right? Like discovering a mystery. And so why not stay with Craven? Because he's the dude trying to figure it out.
Double Indemnity. And I mean, it's like you switch over to, and maybe this is one of the things you were talking about, that maybe it's a product of, and I haven't seen the miniseries.
I don't either.
Maybe that's a product of it. Maybe in some episode of the miniseries.
Well, I'm sure. Because, I mean, if you're going to do six episodes, obviously the main actor's not going to be in every scene.
Right, exactly. So, like, and maybe that was, like, a product
of it. I feel like that's what character, though. There's, like, oh, wow, there's so much more to these characters. Like, every single character that comes on screen. Like, we talked two performances that we didn't like.
Two bad performances.
Yeah. I'm so scared,
yeah, the girlfriend's boyfriend, which you find out later, there's an odd...
Emma Craven's ex-boyfriend is this guy named Sean Roberts, I believe.
Yeah,
is that his name?
Burnham. Yeah, Sean. I mean, in the film, it's called Burnham.
But the actor's name is Sean Roberts. Yeah. He, over the top, a lot of heavy breathing, a lot of stuttering.
Good fight scene, though.
A lot of, yeah, good fight scene. Unnecessary fight scene, but like, and just not a good performance, right? And in much of the same way, in terms of criticism, Emma Craven's best friend is also very scared, you know, a lot of stuttering, a lot of, like...
apparently, all of the people that Emma Craven knew in life were the most melodramatic people ever.
Except for her father.
Yeah.
Except for her father.
Yeah, but the one
who's a good Catholic? I like that little addition.
I don't know.
The one thing, like you said...
Hanging on the cross, banging on the nails.
The movie does well is... Because, like, from the trailer, you think it's going to be this Taken-esque adventure where it's just kicking ass.
Towards the end,
it gets there, but the majority of the movie is slow-burning, and, like... I mean, through a lot of the scenes, I did feel like it's a lot of suspense, like, with the scene with, like, you were talking about. Like, I felt like...
I think you go half and half with it.
Yeah.
I think you go half and half with the suspense.
Yeah, like the first encounter, like, this guy, like Dan was talking about her boyfriend, this whole Northmore, this government.
That's the company that Danny Houston runs.
Yeah, and they're, you know, out to get these guys, and they don't like it when their secrets get unveiled.
When they're taken to the edge.
And so, like, the scenes where Mel Gibson is talking to him, this guy keeps going to a window. I don't know about you guys, but this scene I felt like, oh, man, don't, like, you're getting shot in the head, like, through the window.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we won't tell spoilers, but, no.
Yeah, spoilers.
But, and then there's a scene later in the movie with the car, and,
Yeah, the action sequences, well choreographed, well shot. You can see where the money went. It's not like...
And are we surprised, though, because it's Martin Campbell.
Yeah, that Mark Campbell. I mean, Vertical Limit. The action scene, I mean, laugh at it, yeah, you can, but the action scenes of Brooklyn Limit were well done, too, you know what I mean?
And, I mean, even...
Casino Royale, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, and I mean, we were talking about Casino Royale. Clearly, the one thing that Martin Campbell doesn't do well is anything that's, like, mildly slow.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, Casino Royale, wow, Martin Campbell, you really made me not ever want to, like, wear a tuxedo and play poker. That was literally kind of excruciating. Yeah.
And there are scenes in this film that are of equal excruciation. Like the scene when Craven and Jedburgh, who's Winstone, are out in a park, and they're sitting on a park bench. The shot selection's horrible.
The dialogue's
horrible. The acting's horrible. Did I say that the shot selection's horrible? Yeah. The editing doesn't make any sense. It's like...
Clearly,
it was almost like Campbell told his ADs, like, hey, listen, we need a B-roll scene to tie everything together. So you take Mel and Ray and just make shit up.
Well, here's
the and just take a big crane shot, and then two extreme close-ups, and then that'll be the
scene.
Well,
and it's like whoever he told to do that, like, clearly no semblance of the 180-degree rule. Pretty much all over that movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There was literally no...
Strange.
Yeah, no rule of thumb according to any, you know, cinematography.
Yeah, it's just a sloppy movie, I don't know, altogether.
It turned strange.
Editing was a little
sloppy.
What
about some of Mel Gibson's line, like the box of tarantulas line? He says something. He's like,
that sounds just as bad as anything he would say in that movie. So
I'll look up the exact line, but
there are other lines, though. There are.
I mean, well, there's the one in the trailer that
you're either hanging on the cross or banging the nails. Which, truthfully, when he said it, I didn't like groan. It wasn't bad.
Yeah,
I mean, me and you laughed because we were waiting for the line.
And here's,
but, like,
I said this to Dan when we walked out of the screening. Not walked out, obviously, when it was over.
We walked out in the middle.
No, but when the movie was over, I said this to Dan, that the lines in the trailer, that I would watch the trailer and be like, wow, that was a bad line. Like, are actually, some of them are actually delivered better in the context of the
certain way.
In the context of the film.
You're out of your jurisdiction. That was not delivered. That was
sure.
pretty much the
no,
same.
That was bad.
That was the exception.
That was bad. But even like the, you're my girl. Like, yeah. I saw that in the trailer and I was like, you know, like, fuck that line. Like,
but I love that line in the movie. I did love the line. Dude, the first 20 minutes of the movie, I did like a lot.
Right,
I'll
before,
say.
Spoiler alerts, she gets shot.
Yeah. Well, Emma Craven's the most interesting
character. Yeah.
Why couldn't she just have lived and then Thomas Craven got shot?
Yeah.
The line I was saying, he goes to the senator's house later in the film because, you know, he's going to throw a box of tarantulas into the situation or something.
Let's take a moment. This is one of these movies. I gave it a 6 out of 10 when I initially reviewed it, and I apologize. Because I would have, if I had to go back, I would have probably given it a 5 or 4.5.
It's watchable.
And here's the thing.
It's watchable, but there's
this
a lot.
Is a movie,
yeah,
this is a movie that I would, like, recommend that, like, my, and not just
my
because,
fucking mother.
Yeah, my mother. This is a movie that I would recommend that my mother and my father watch if they have nothing else to go see at the cinema on a Friday night.
Who says cinema anymore, Connor?
Anyway, but actually, spoilers for, like...
Yeah, from now on, we'll go into spoilers.
Yeah,
so,
spoilers.
Before, yeah.
The ending, yeah, with that last sequence with Ray Winstone.
The Departed, I think that's what he got it from, right?
No, I think he got it from Shooter.
Yeah,
that, well, no,
with
that,
the,
no, but
hey, we're politicians, and, you know,
let's
just
all sit and talk about how we
got away
with
it. Like...
But from Departed, how everyone, you know... There was like 10.
The Mel Gibson. You mean the Mel Gibson scene?
Well, no. They.
I guess
Ray Winstone goes to see.
Oh,
he gets shot.
True.
Shoots everyone.
True.
He's, yeah.
True. Actually, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. Wow.
Yeah. That is true.
Good
you're right. And William Monahan wrote it.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. I was just thinking about Shooter the entire time. I really
so
wasn't.
Clearly, the end of Mel Gibson's Viking movie is going to be DiCaprio and co-stars. Shooting each other. end of
spoilers
movie.
For a 2012 movie coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah.
About Vikings.
Yeah, just done. They all shoot each other.
He'll take out Uzis at the end and just blow each other.
Good job, Bill Monahan.
Well, actually, or maybe DiCaprio will say in that movie, do you want to chop me up and feed me to the poor? And then they actually chop him up
and
feed him
to the
poor.
Because
Vikings might have done that.
Yeah,
you know. Classic Monahan.
So, yeah, Edge of Darkness.
I mean, I guess we could talk about.
Go.
Do we talk about the ending? I don't like the variant.
I mean, like I.
Well, I'll say this. Best part of the movie. My favorite. I love Ray Winstone. Now, granted,
okay.
like you said, some of his lines you couldn't understand, but he's got such a presence. That I think he really, I mean, that
yeah,
made that role his,
and
one of the and the most interesting character of the ones that lived until the end.
This is one of the things that I couldn't get out of my mind.
Except
when
he got
shot. Watching the movie.
What's it mean? Lived until the end when everyone died. Spoiler alert: everybody dies at the end of this film.
Except Mel Gibson and his daughter walk away into heaven.
Right, clearly.
And that was really.
And spoilers! Spoilers! They run into Paul Bettany in heaven.
And Nicolas Cage in the City of Angels.
I don't know. I just, it's so, like, it's such an unsatisfying movie. I don't know.
Well,
just,
and like, here's the thing. It's
a retroactive movie. When I first saw it, I was like, eh. And now I'm like,
yeah. Vowels. We review in vowels here at
the
film.
It's an
But I actually, you mentioned that it's unsatisfying, which is totally true. But I remember thinking, watching the movie, that I was satisfied for a second when he takes the milk. And, like, he fucking pours it down Danny Houston's throat. I remember being like, yes, you didn't shoot him. And then what do? He shoots him. Like, he poisons him. Poisons him to kill him in this really excruciating way.
Context, you find out that Northmore is poisoning people.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But anyway, yes.
So. Yeah, so
if you've gone this far, though, you've
right. He poisons.
You've been taken to the edge.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take you over the edge.
Also, in terms of disappointments, I was disappointed they didn't say the title of the movie.
I know.
Yeah, you know.
I was disappointed that at some point Danny Houston's character didn't go, this guy's taking us to the edge of darkness.
He would have made the movie that
way. Or if, like, when Danny Houston, like, begging for his life, like, Mel Gibson just responds with, I'm gonna take you to the edge of darkness. And then just, like, and then feeds him poison.
Well, but there's a teaser moment when Ray Winstone has this little soliloquy about, like, the darkness.
Yeah,
and I was like, either they make a Charlie Murphy reference here, or they say Edge of Darkness.
One of those two things.
Like we said, like this movie, people thought they were expecting Taken, but with Taken, they kind of knew what they were doing. With this movie, I feel like it tried to fit, you know, the 6-part miniseries. It tried to do all these things, right.
And apparently, they took a lot from the Troy Kennedy Martin teleplay, the guy who wrote the initial miniseries, it's dated. It's a dated story.
And the thing about this, it is dated, because I remember...
I mean, Radioactive?
I remember when that... Because I had no idea that that was even...
Isn't everything Radioactive?
Well, it feels like a 70s movie. That's what
we were
saying.
It does. It feels like a 70s, 80s movie.
Try, you know,
like, it feels like Marathon Man. It feels like All the President's Men. It feels like, you know, the day, 3 Days of the Condor.
Yeah.
Those movies, which were all much, much better, but...
Yeah.
But, I mean, under, you know...
And even, I mean, the... You mentioned that, like, Taken knew what it was doing, and this didn't. It's funny because, I mean, this is, like, Taken, at least, it was a fun movie. Like, this movie, it never gets fun. It has, it has little peaks of moments where you go, oh, shit, and that's about it. Yep. But, you know, and I think that,
You know what it kind of reminds me of, actually? The International. Last year.
Yeah.
It's a lot like The International, because The International sold itself in the trailers as an action-packed movie, and then when you go to watch it, it was a lot like an 80s, 70s,
espionage.
You know,
conspiracy.
Conspiracy.
Yeah,
very, a paranoid thriller. And there were, like, action sequences in it that were brilliant, but the rest of the movie was stale. And this is a lot like it, actually. It's like kind of a stale mystery with some brilliant action sequences in it.
And brilliant, like, well done.
Yeah, like what's weird is The International has better action sequences, and I
well, that one,
I did. Well, that counts as, like, 4.
Yeah,
that's
like
a 20-minute OK Corral shootout.
This is actually, this is something that I was thinking about, and I couldn't get out of my mind while watching the movie. What do you think this movie would have been like if De Niro hadn't dropped out?
If De Niro had played Jedburgh?
See, I like it the way
it
is.
I think that... De Niro
he would have drawn too much to have
phoned it in.
Yeah,
I hate to say that, but like,
well, no, and that's, I mean, that's what I was thinking. Like, do you, like, I agree. I think it would.
Like, I think
it would have joined his rank, his like list of like righteous kill. Yeah. And
well, what's funny is he actually was on, like you said, he was actually on set and shot like a couple of days. He was on set for like a few days. He realized he had creative differences. You know, they always stole that term around.
So, but I think, I mean, I'll say this obviously with some reserve, but. I think that, Ray Winstone and Robert De Niro together now, Winstone's a better actor. Now.
Yeah, now. Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Because De Niro, he makes Meet the Fockers and Little Fockers and Righteous Kill and, you know, these movies, you know, Hide and Seek and
Rock and Bullwinkle. That's not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, thank God that was like 10 years ago. I forgot about that. But movies like that, we just like, kind of like Al Pacino, we're just like, ah. And, I mean, if and when he makes that next movie that reestablishes him, yes, great. But until that time, I mean, you know, everybody's fine. Come on.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd rather see Winstone in a movie than De Niro.
And Winstone, like we said, brings that mysterious element. No one, I mean, probably, I wouldn't expect not a lot of people to see
Ray Winstone, like, I want to go see 44-inch chest because Ray Winstone's in it.
Right.
You know, so that's, I mean, that's the kind of actor he's become. Yeah. That's, I mean, good for him.
Yeah. So wrapping up Edge of Darkness, kind of start with you. What do you think anyone should go see this movie?
No. No, not anyone. I mean, I think that if you're the kind of person that's even really taking the length of time to listen to this podcast and to listen to what people like us have to say, you can skip it.
Right.
Yeah. But if your mom asks you, hey, your dad and I are going to go out for like a date night on Friday night, what should we go see? Tell them Crazy Heart, and if that's sold out,
Avatar,
and then if that's sold out, which it
Book
would
of
be.
Eli. Book of Eli, and then if that's sold out,
Youth Interval.
And then if Youth Interval's on theaters.
Just tell them to go to the edge.
Even White Ribbon is coming out.
No, don't know what's it.
It's definitely, I mean, and I'll still stand by this. If you know, you're that group of middle-aged, you know...
Mel Gibson supporters.
It
appears that's who went.
It won't be the worst 2 hours you spend in a movie theater, but it certainly will not be the best 2 hours you spend.
And like Dan said, it's a very retroactive movie. Like when I came out, I tweeted.
We all agree, it's
a good movie, whatever. And now it just doesn't stay with you at all.
I think, like, for example, Book of Eli is the opposite. When I saw it, I kind of reacted the same way. I was like, meh, you know, it was good. Action was good. But the more I think about it, the more I respect it.
Definitely.
What I try to do. Agreed. You know, yeah. So I am kind of flip-flopping on that way.
Yep. You know. So, Edge of Darkness.
We've gone to the edge, and we've returned
safely. So
in the lightness. We are now in the dying of the light.
Ooh.
No. So, do you want to do a little weekly? We always talk about Avatar because it's biggest movie in years. So
actually, I'm glad I came on this film stage podcast. I'd like to make a confession right now, listeners. I am one of the five people in the world who has not seen Avatar. I will follow that up immediately with that is actually it has been such a prolonged experience that it is the number one thing on my to-do list this weekend, and I have a lot to do. So,
nice.
clearly, it's it's not that important to me, otherwise I would have seen it already.
Yeah.
But, so yeah.
Nice. We'll next week we'll report and see what kind of thought. So, but we talked last week about box office. We thought Edge of Darkness might win, and that did not happen. Avatar got $31 million, only a 10% drop. And now this week, as of tonight, Avatar will be the highest grossing movie of America. Beat Titanic and everything. So, yeah. I mean, last week I threw out the number that it might hit $2.5 billion.
I think it's not even a question.
I think it'll possibly even get higher. I mean, it's insane.
I was thinking, I mean, it could hit 2.75.
No,
man.
Yeah. Or 3. or 17 billion.
I always wonder, actually, you know, anytime Avatar comes up, is like, how much do you think, like, James Cameron just looks at, even say, like, a $50 bill and just says, fuck it, and just lights him on fire? Like, man has made so much money.
I read a report that said he's getting $300 million.
Yeah, and that was
just from Avatar.
Now it's got to be at least 350.
Yeah. It was over 3 weeks ago that I read this. Like this was just a deal. So I don't know how much.
I think he spends his nights reenacting that scene from The Dark Knight where Heath Ledger lights half a pile of money on fire. Like, I mean, the man is made. And kudos to, like, congratulations, really. And I know, I mean, I haven't seen the movie, and I mean, I haven't seen it because I haven't been ever terribly excited for it. You know, if you can go ahead. If you want, but I mean, good for him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No. I think the movie certainly is earning every penny that it's making.
The big question: now that it's one of the possible records, it could. Do you think when will it get beat? When will it fall to number two? Now, I don't think it will next week. We have From Paris with Love.
I think
and
the
Dear
Wolfman
John, and the Wolfman. And even that, I think.
I kind of hope to. I mean, I'm like.
Hey, when is the Wolfman coming out?
You know, this week is From Paris with Love and Dear John, and the next week is Percy Jackson and the Wolfman, February 12th. And then the week after that is Shutter Island.
I think I would hope by Shutter Island.
Well, okay, right now it's at 30 million. Let's say it dropped, you know, right? Avatar made 30 million last week at 25. You know, if it's dropping 10% each week like it has been. By that time, it'd be like 22, 23, and I think Wolfman could muster up, or Percy Jackson. That it seems to have a lot
and
of
And I
fans,
think it's so. Almost going to be like what we were praying, what you were saying, you know, in a perfect world, Meryl Streep and Sandra Bullock split the vote and it goes to
Kara Mulligan. Yeah. You think that'll happen with Percy Jackson?
You know, because I mean, it's like you get your kid crowd,
yeah.
You know, with that and whoever's reading that book, you know, that demographic.
Yeah,
and
then lost
and
on
literally, yeah, literally, I mean, you get the people that are, you know, just have seen Avatar 5 times by now, so they'd like to see something else. And so, I mean, I think that if it's not Shutter Island, which it needs to be,
if it is not Shutter Island, we're gonna quit podcast and just
we're gonna shut down the website.
Yeah.
So if it's not if Martin Scorsese can't do it, I at least would like to think that
his writer couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Hopefully he can.
Yeah, and I mean, so I'd like to think that at least two, you know, movies that can split Avatar's demographic.
Right. I mean, this week there's no question. I don't think either of them. Will. I mean, Taken made a lot of money, but it was over. You know, a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know,
John Travolta sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dear John, fuck that movie. So, well, I think
Dear John is gonna do what all of these romantic movies have been doing. You know, 13 mil, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever. You know, it'll gross 25.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So next week we'll be back only with, I think we'll probably see it from Paris with Love.
Yeah.
Well, why not? You know,
it's
well, I can give you a couple reasons.
We're gonna spend our hard earned cash.
There's one huge reason why not. Yeah. The Ron Revolta.
So,
it is what we do.
Yeah. And there was no press screening, so we're going to have to, you know.
Oh, sweet God.
There was a press screening for Dear John, but we avoided that just because.
Hey, we spent money on the surrogates. Why not?
That's true.
Oh, God. All right, so on that note, let's just.
Yeah.
I'll go take a hot shower.
So check out Dan's review of Edge of Darkness.
Check it out. And Meryl's. And Meryl's too. Yes. He liked a little bit more.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, check out the Film Stage Spotlight, which is a podcast that Meryl does, and you can check that out on our site. And you can also find all this news that we're talking about and all the Oscar noms and kind of a reaction piece that I wrote to the reaction to the Oscar noms on the Film Stage. And you can follow me at twitter.com/.
And also be aware of our Oscar predictions will be coming out probably like a week or so.
Yeah, definitely
before the big night. So
yeah, and email us, you know, editors@thefilmstage.com with any questions, anything you'd like us to talk about. And I want to thank Connor.
Seriously, I want to know about the Boston accent. Email me,
yeah, DJ Mecca. And I want to thank Connor for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
you guys. Have a good
night. You are the man that ruined the world. Your heart's on the loose. You rolled him sevens with nothing to lose. This ain't no place for the weak.